This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Well, with his kingdom of governance laid out before him, House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, all the generals, President Donald Trump dared to surprise last night and appeared to revel in being commander-in-chief.
To those allies who wonder what kind of a friend America will be, look no further than the heroes who wear our uniform. Our foreign policy calls for a direct, robust, and meaningful engagement with the world.
In a primetime address to a joint session of Congress Tuesday night, President Donald Trump, whose critics say he doesn't read, read for an hour off of teleprompter.
To any in Congress who do not believe we should enforce our laws, I would ask you this one question. What would you say to the American family that loses their jobs, their income, or their loved one because America refused to uphold its laws and defend its borders?
I guess what I'm saying here, this was a real speech. Congressional leaders who are weary of White House chaos were charged up and enthused by this real presidential-sounding speech, which called for some big-idea projects, some even worthy of the opposition.
Crumbling infrastructure will be replaced with new roads, bridges, tunnels, airports, and railways gleaming across our very, very beautiful land.
So we assembled three voters. We've got a Republican who voted for Trump, Cheryl St. Germain, a former restaurant owner in Marco Island, Florida. We've got a Democrat who voted for Trump, Kenneth Lancey, a business turnaround expert from Cleveland, author of Working for the Greater Good of All, Really. And we've got a Republican who didn't vote for Trump, Hal Scoggins, an attorney from Portland, Oregon. Welcome to all three of you.
It's good to be here.
All right. Thank you.
So we're kind of sitting around on the couch here. We've just heard this speech. What are your impressions?
Well, this is Ken Lancey. I was very impressed with the speech. And although I say I'm impressed, it's what I expected, President Trump would deliver. He is a very different president. He has delivered a speech that we've heard a lot of these parts in the past from other presidents, and unfortunately, politicians have not delivered on any of those promises. And I do believe that for the first time, America has the chance to have a president who is not a politician, who's going to come in here and do what needs to be done for the American people.
All right. Well, sounds like Ken's happy. Hal?
I think Ken put his finger on one of the things that people were hoping for from President Trump, which is someone who's not a traditional politician and doesn't act like a traditional politician. I had that impression as I watched parts of the speech. I didn't get to see all of it. But my other impression was there's a lot of ideas there. Now the real question is, how do you make them work? How do you put them into action? And especially, how do you do that with people on both sides of the aisle who have some skepticism about some of those ideas?
Anybody nervous last night before this speech began? Cheryl?
Okay, it's my turn. I was nervous, and I was not expecting him to be as dynamic as he was, because we all know that President Trump does not say what we want him to say. In the past, he has disappointed, he's embarrassed, and he just goes his own way. This speech was to perfection. It was intelligent. It was heartfelt. He was sincere. He was soft, but yet forceful. I was totally blown away. And as I'm watching, the one word that came to mind was La La Land. And I didn't see the movie at all, but it was like this perfect world, what he was describing. And I know it's just the beginning, and I know it's going to get worse before it gets better, but I felt very confident, very supportive that if anyone can make these things happen, I have a lot of confidence and faith in him right now. I felt great about it. I left with real positive, good feelings.
Totally blown away, says Cheryl. La La Land is her description. Give me a highlight. What were moments that made you feel that way?
Well, when he was personal, yet strong, he demonstrated the fact that he was going to be powerful and get things done, but yet he wasn't like a madman. He wasn't like the way that he comes off and the way that people have him as a monster. He was just very logical and calm. It was presidential, and it was a pleasure to – and once again, I'm not saying, you know, we're in it, so it's going to be easy. I just feel that his the approval that knowing he didn't actually write this, but he approved and he felt really good about this speech, and that therefore I feel really good about it. It's how he is. You know, he's what he is.
Anybody got highlights? Anybody remember any moments that really, you know, good or bad, or even in you know, shots of the audience?
Well, I was very disappointed in the lack of participation from the other side. I am a lifelong Democrat, and I voted for Obama's first term, and I had great optimism for hope and change. What I have found out about politics and having gotten involved several years ago running for mayor of Cleveland is that politics is a dirty game. It isn't about Democrats or Republicans. It's about keeping outsiders out. And as a Democrat, I ran against the Democrat, and the Republican Party held a fundraiser for the other Democrat. I knew then that the fix is in. And because when he announced, I immediately supported him, knowing what he was going to go up against. I have met him a number of times, and I can tell you that the man you saw last night is the man he is. That is what he is at heart, and he truly has a passion for America. So if you listen to the speech, you walk away and you want to talk negatively about him, in my opinion, you're not an American. Because
wait,
this was
a minute.
All about
you're not an American
America.
If you talk negatively about Trump?
I want to tell you that this is the core of American values. If we can't all agree what he said, okay, is not what we all would like to have and feel for our children and grandchildren, then I don't know that we belong here. This is the core of America. And so politics aside, you have to give him time now. You know, I heard, well, I didn't hear details. Well, I went back and I listened to Obama's 2009 address. And I want to tell you that 95% of what he said, he didn't do. That's politics. If he'd have done that, we wouldn't be in the position we are. If Clinton would have done what he said, we wouldn't be here. His take on immigration. You know, he said everything that Trump said in 94, but yet when Trump said it, he was picked on for it. And he's homophobic, he's racist, he's this, he's that. I got to tell you that you have to give the man a chance, whether you're – it's not politics. It's about we need to fix the system that's broke. It's us, the American people, against politicians because they are self-serving and not doing anything for the least of us.
Although there were a lot of politicians in that hall, Hal Scoggins, and they all seemed very – you know, they seem very much bonded with Donald Trump. I mean, he's going to be relying on politicians to get these promises made into reality.
Well, I'll agree with Ken that one side certainly seemed bonded with Trump. The other side did not seem bonded with Trump. But that, to me, again, that's not a surprise in this type of speech, nor would I have necessarily expected real specifics out of this type of speech. I heard a commentator the other day described these either State of the Union or other speeches to joint sessions as visionary speeches and not specific calls to specific action. So that doesn't surprise me. But I do think one of the important things about where we are politically right now is people need to come together and hear each other, and there is a vast group in America that feels like they haven't been heard for quite some time. That's a big part of what got Trump elected, and I think the politicians on both sides of the aisle need to pay attention to that, need to hear that, and need to start governing in a different sort of way. And as Americans, I think we in the citizenry need to do the same thing. It doesn't do any good to call each other un-American. It doesn't do any good to simply listen to ourselves talk and people that are like us. We need to hear what other people who feel marginalized have to say. It struck me yesterday that we may be at a time in our country where more than half of the country feels marginalized, which is bizarre. That's a bizarre concept, but you have a lot of people who voted for Trump that feel like they've been shut out of the process and their voice is not heard.
But are they going to be feeling happy after last night? I mean, are they going to feel not marginalized? Are they going to feel like, all right, I'm getting listened to, or is it just going to come across as a bunch of promises?
I don't think a speech changes that one way or the other, unless it's an extraordinary speech in an extraordinary time in response to some specific event. I think what will change that is what happens in the coming weeks and months. What does the president do? What does Congress do? How do they work together? What happens when they don't completely agree on the details of getting some of this done? How do they work for compromise to move the agenda forward?
Cheryl, what did you make of, I have to say, Ryan Owens' widow there in the hall, tears streaming down her face, the whole hall standing. This is the Navy SEAL, the wife of the Navy SEAL who died in the raid in Yemen, that apparently yielded no intelligence despite what the president said last night. Cheryl, did your heart go out to this woman? Did you feel it was a little bit much? I mean, I don't know. I was a little confused.
Personally, it was a bit much. I don't feel they did that on purpose. I feel they were feeling her loss, and I took it personal because I am a widow, and not like my husband, you know, died for our country. But I had that emotion. And I felt her loss. It was definitely, they were building on it for sure. But I was okay with that. It was human and
sincere.
It didn't bother me. I mean, it was sad. And I'm not saying the fact that they had that be, what was it, 2 minutes? It was quite a while.
Yeah. But you got something to say there, Ken?
Yeah, it was very, very heartfelt, very sincere, and it's a tragedy. I mean, what can you say about it? And when you see somebody have that raw emotion, you can't help but have it affect you. And at that moment, the only thing we can do to honor her husband is to applaud, is to support, is to feel her pain. And I think that that's what the group of people there last night did. I don't think it was a contrived, like, you know, yeah, keep going, nobody holding up signs. This was heartfelt. I mean, this is what America's about. I mean, we've lost a soldier, and we have to take this more seriously about sending men and women into war and then pulling out of places without saying, well, we have control. I mean, those lives in Iraq have really been lost in vain, and that tears me up because we just walked away. And I don't believe that, you know, I mean, I've done turnarounds and I've gotten involved in tough issues. You don't walk away after you've been successful and say it's going to take care of itself. It doesn't work that way. And in war, especially when we trade the lives of humans and then we walk away and it ends up worse than it was, that is just tragic.
Well,
it's tragic.
In this case, they didn't gain any intelligence despite what the president
says. I mean, see, this is perception and reality. I mean, you hear what other people say, okay, but the people on the inside are telling you otherwise. So you're going to believe people that are on the outside that say, well, I heard this and this is what I could tell you. I can't tell you my source. But you've heard it from the people that have derived the information and said, we have it. Now, you have to give them face value. I mean, how could you – if you don't have facts, this is the problem. He stood there last night with all the problems that we have in our country. Do you think he was part of any of them at all? The people that sat in those chairs are the ones that got us to where we are today. I have been in the inner city 25 years providing millions of dollars of support, philanthropy, in education for children in Cleveland, and yet it's not changed. what is wrong with that picture?
Is he going to change inner city
Cleveland? Definitely going to be able to start the ball rolling and pull the politics out of this. There are things that need to be said. And, you know, I listened to Obama's speech. And Obama, in the very, you know, first speech that he gave, he talked about the failure of the family. And that's where we have to support. And it begins at home. But in 8 years, that didn't change. It didn't change. And a child, I belong to an organization, Chairman Emeritus, Project Love. We provide 4 years of comprehensive mentoring. And at the end of every 4 years in our programs, we take the 55% graduation rate in Cleveland with the at-risk girls, we take it to 85%.
Well, that's great. And the block grants, I just hope that the community block grants that they are talking about threatening and cutting, you know, don't go away, because that's the kind of program.
This is private money, and we can't even get the support, though, from the administration, all right, or the school board.
Well, these
to
are the
expand the program.
These are the details and challenges that are going to be post speech. I just want to go back for a moment to the Owen emotional sort of climax there in the speech. Did anyone ask themselves, you know, sitting on the couch together, you three? When that was all through and, you know, you felt her pain and all of the patriotism and all of that, you know, wait a minute, we're in a war in Yemen?
The reason that I didn't is because in a certain sense, I wouldn't say war, but we have issues all over the globe. And there is terrorism. There are threats all over the globe. And it's not a secret that Yemen has been a hotbed of activity in that area. And it's not like this was a war action. This was something else. So that particular thing didn't surprise me.
All right. Cheryl?
No, I personally feel that our country, we have so much anger and so much fear. And with the Democrats and Republican being against, I just felt last night that some of the words that came across from President Trump was, let's get together, let's us quit beating each, you know, let's be on the same side. It's senseless to try to get things done and not see eye to eye. And there's so much right now going on in the American people, anger and fear with the issues. Trump is only going to be successful if everyone gives him a chance, you know, opportunity.
I get that. Before we go, we've got to wrap it up here, but I wanted to try to just make one more stab here at getting you guys not to argue, but just to interact a little bit more. And that's fine. Don't worry. You've been great. I want the three of you to think about a promise that he made in this speech and come to a conclusion and then sort of report to me after your discussion that we'll listen to of which one it is you're most going to be watching over the next year.
That's tough. You know, my first thought, of course, is healthcare, because that's going to be so challenging. Mm-hmm. It is such a mess. And it took so long to imply it and get it going and understand it. And now just to take it away, I totally support Obamacare being changed to a workable financial. Right now it's a disaster. So that is something that I'm probably going to be watching. Whether I'm going to be involved in caring about all of it, but that was the first thing that came to my mind was the healthcare problem.
I agree.
That. I think that's a critical area that it is going to require both Trump and Congress and others to be involved. And it's big and it's complicated, and it involves more than just saying, we're going to move forward and we're going to make insurance cheaper. It involves a lot of moving pieces, and it's got to be thought out before it's done. And I think that's one thing that I will be looking for him that's different than the first couple of weeks of his presidency, where it seems like things were done before they were thought out, and then they had to be stopped and redone. And that's not a good way to govern. And I think he's seeing that, and whether he can change appropriately is going to be something to see. And the Affordable Care Act issues, that's certainly a good litmus test for that.
Well, the Affordable Care Act, as it is stated and called, is not affordable. You know, I'm an employer and that have employed thousands of people. I spend millions of dollars of my own money. I'm not a public company. I'm a privately held family company. And what we do to provide health care benefits comes out of our pockets.
Well, the argument on the Affordable Care Act is, you know, that's a sort of a settled matter. It's definitely going to be rolled back. Ken, yes. Is this the litmus test, though? Are you agreeing with your two committee members there that health care is the litmus test, or is something else in this speech the thing that you're going to really watch over the next year as a sign that Trump's going to be able to make good on all those promises that have disappointed you over the last two administrations?
Yeah. Well, probably the most important one is to get the economy going and to be able to give the tax cuts that are necessary for business to be able to want to invest. Also, what he's doing with keeping jobs here and creating jobs here.
All right. So here's the disagreement. So Cheryl and Hal, it's health care. But Ken says, no, it's jobs and the economy. And, you know, those are the arguments that Obama had with the Rahm Emanuel, you know, when they started Obamacare 8 years ago. What do you think? The economy stupid or move ahead on health care?
It's all important. And he's made promises on all of them. So, yeah, I mean, to me, there's no single litmus test. He's a president that has said he wants to do a lot. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, he has put out a broad agenda, and he is working on them simultaneously. And the difference between politicians and business people, and I can speak from both ends, having worked with some politicians for several years, it's not about getting the job done. It's about keeping their job. And in business, we can't – that's not what we do. In order to survive for tomorrow, we must live and prosper today. We can't keep footballing our problems and asking other people for more money to solve the problems where you are not solving. So he is taking a businessman's approach, and I can see that very, very methodically. Yes, is he getting some misinformation? I mean, it's the first month that he's in there, and he put out an immigration plan, and maybe it wasn't the best thought out process.
Okay, Hal, or Ken's making that great argument on the economy. Cheryl, you got one last chance here. I'll give you the last word.
I'm speechless. That's not right. Okay, the economy, it all goes together. It's not like a 1, 2, 3. It's like every issue has got to be addressed, and I care about them all. I'm going with the economy, healthcare. I just want to rattle them all off. Safety, foreign, you know, immigrant. It's just he's got a lot of challenges, and I have confidence. And it's going to take time. It's not going to be in the next 60 days. It's going to a year from now. You know,
right?
We're going to be in much better strength to jobs and support.
Well, let's check with you guys in a year. Cheryl, Ken, and Hal, thank you so much.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, John.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.